Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, or whenever you are listening to this podcast, everyone. You're listening to another episode of The Basketball Truth, presented by the Red Light Sports Network with your host, Kevin Cunningham. Over the last something like 14, 13-ish hours, I've done a couple podcasts over at the Titan Talk, which is my other platform in which I voice my unbelievably, amazingly accurate sports knowledge for the Tennessee Titans. Again, a couple podcasts over there with the NFL draft, obviously coming up, and then I just got done with a podcast 15 minutes ago regarding what happened in the first round. So if you're an NFL fan whatsoever, I kind of run through all 32 picks of the first round, so you can check that out over at theredlightsportsnetwork.com, which is where all of our archive podcasts and blogs for many sports are. But so if you're an NFL fan, if you're a Titans fan especially, you can follow that show at RLS and Titans. If you're a fan of me, which obviously who wouldn't be, cough, cough, you can follow me on Twitter at KIDCUNI. Or, more importantly, if you're listening to this show, obviously, you can follow us on Twitter at RLSN Basketball. So, before I get into the NBA playoffs and just kind of the first round in general, without previewing the second round matchups yet, I still want to get through everything in the first round first before I talk about second round matchups and what I potentially think will happen in the second round. That's for another day. This is about wrapping up the first round outside of what has yet to be completed. But so before I get into that, again, head over to the redlightsportsnetwork.com where all of our archive podcasts and blogs are. Top right, click and go logo for DraftKings. If you're into fantasy sports whatsoever, they do daily leagues for whether it's, you know, playoff basketball, playoff hockey, whether it's for golf, any tournaments coming up, or I'm missing one. MLB, obviously, regular season. Again, daily lineups, whether it's free or for a quarter, a dollar, $5, $10, $100, a grand. You can put however much you want realistically on the line over at DraftKings. But again, top right corner of the redlightsportsnetwork.com, click and go logo for DraftKings. Got to give a shout out to them. So, roughly 43 minutes left here, 42. Just trying to get through the first round of the playoffs here. Kind of go through each series. Obviously, some series I'll talk about more than others, but kind of run through my predictions and what I think, not necessarily will happen, but just kind of what happened for, you know, each team that's won to this point in the first round. But so Golden, we'll start out West, and Golden State, where do I want to start out East? Nah, I'll start out West. Golden State beat the Pelicans 4-0. That's exactly what I predicted. Actually, just to make sure here, I'm going to go over to the redlightsportsnetwork.com. That's some solid, solid advertising, I must say. Got my little article that I wrote up a couple weeks ago regarding what I thought would happen in each of these first-round series. But so, out West, Golden State, New Orleans, I had the Warriors in five. I thought New Orleans would be able to pull one game away from Golden State. They almost did, but alas, Golden State 1-4. 4-5 matchup, Portland-Memphis. Even though Memphis was the five, they had home court advantage. Kind of set the tone for the series. They opened up the first two games at home, rolled through Portland. Portland never really had much of a shot in the series. Memphis just kind of defensively crushed them, and they scored enough to get by because of their defense. But so they won 4-1. I had Portland in seven, I believe. Let's see here. Ooh, never mind. I had Portland in six. So, yeah, that prediction there, Portland in six, ended up being Memphis in five. I was obviously terribly off on that one. We'll go to the 2-7 in Houston-Dallas. Also terribly wrong on this one. Houston got through Dallas in five. They won their series 4-1. Ultimately, Dallas just, you know, Chandler Parsons being hurt, Rondo giving them nothing. Dallas just couldn't really stop Houston in that series. I'm going to take a look at the scores for that series because I'm curious now. But there was nothing really Dallas could do defensively more than anything against Houston. Houston put up 118 in game one, 111 in game two, 130 in game three. Houston lost, scoring 109 in game four. Then in game five, they scored 103. Clearly, Houston had their way offensively in the series. I predicted Dallas in Houston 1-5. Again, completely wrong. So, take my predictions for what they're worth. But the series I obviously wanted to talk about the most out west was L.A. and San Antonio. And as a Boston fan, I have to point out that we're talking about the Clippers, not the Lakers, because the Lakers didn't make the playoffs. But as a Lakers fan, you can obviously fire back at me and say that Boston did pretty well this postseason by winning a whopping same amount of games that L.A. did. So there's always that. But in any case, Clippers-Spurs tonight, the Clippers were down 3-2 in the series. They had to go to San Antonio. Things looked like they were going San Antonio's way. San Antonio, you could kind of say they stole one in Game 5 at L.A. But it's the Spurs, and playing clutch late never really surprises you. But in this game, Game 6, just some key things to note. Rebounding-wise, the two teams basically even. Free throws, different story. Clippers made 22 free throws to San Antonio's 12. That was a huge advantage. But Spurs also made 12 threes to the Clippers 4. So there's that. Clippers outshot them from the field 47% to 43%. So, I mean, for the Spurs, leading scorer was Marco Bellinelli. He put in 23. Boris Diaw put in 17. Those were the two leading scorers. The starters, Leonard, Duncan, Splitter, Green, Parker, they totaled 24, 33, 48 points. 48 points. That's, even if you're the Spurs, it's hard to win a game when your starters give you 48 points combined. I'm not big into plus-minus, but Kawhi Leonard was minus 19. It was the worst in the game. Shot 1 of 3 from 3, 3 of 15 from the field. Wasn't Kawhi's best game. Also had 4 turnovers, which were a game high. So, you know, when your best player, arguably, in Kawhi Leonard, plays very poorly, and your starters combine for 48 points, that's a pretty bad game. Yeah, you made 12 threes, but outside of that, the Spurs played pretty poorly. Gave up 102 points, which obviously isn't the greatest. And so San Antonio, we've obviously seen better from them. And I expect them, coming off a loss, Game 7, everything on the line, this may be Tim Duncan's, Manu Ginobili's, Tony Parker's final games if they lose. So I expect the Spurs to answer the call, especially after a loss. If they were down 3-2 and they won Game 6, and then it's Game 7 at L.A., maybe I don't give them as much of an advantage. I would still favor the Spurs to win in Los Angeles. Call me crazy. But I see the Spurs winning Game 7. Before the series started, I think I had the Spurs in 6. Yeah, I did. Coming into the series, here's my exact take, mini take on this series. I said, yes, the Clippers are the number three seed here, but let's be real, San Antonio's the better team. People make a big deal of home court advantage, which I agree for in a single game is huge, but for a seven-game series, home court only takes over in game seven in terms of having the advantage. Until then, both teams potentially get three games at home. That's been the case, but home court advantage is actually taking place here, which is kind of ironic. Clippers are 9-1 in the last 10 and have won 7 straight, best in the NBA. I think Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, and DeAndre Jordan are really good players, but outside of those three and Jamal Crawford off the bench, the team is very lackluster. Still feel that way, even though Austin Rivers has had a couple games in the series, which make me look stupid for that comment. J.J. Redick is good from three, but again, the bench outside of Crawford can't be trusted. It also has to be said that Glenn Davis is out. I went on to say put them up against the Spurs, and I don't see them winning a seven-game series. The Spurs' offense should roll in this one. That hasn't necessarily been the case. The Spurs have had a couple duds outside of making them 12 threes tonight, last night, whatever you want to call it. Their offense really wasn't spectacular. And then there was a game early in the series where Spurs' offense just looked like crap. Game one, actually. So, you know, if the Spurs lay an egg offensively in L.A., they're going to get beat by 15. I don't see it happening after a loss in a Game 7. I think it's a very tough matchup for the Spurs. You're on the road. You just got beat. But I almost consider them just getting beat a couple nights before a Game 7 motivation for them to win a Game 7. Especially where some of these players' careers are at, age-wise. So, call me crazy, but I give the Spurs the edge in Game 7. Blake Griffin, 26-12 tonight. DeAndre Jordan, 15-14. Chris Paul, 19-15. But Chris Paul also went 1-7 from 3, with 7-21 from the field. So he didn't have the most spectacular game. Obviously, with 15 assists. He did what he wanted to offensively, minus shooting the ball. Only had one turnover. 15 assists, one turnover, that's pretty solid in case you're not a huge basketball guy. Again, it's a tough matchup for the Spurs because of guys like Griffin and Paul. They're just hard to stop with the Spurs personnel. But I think in a one-game scenario, coming off a loss, some of these guys might view this as potentially their last game if they do lose. I give the Spurs the edge. I'm not burying them yet, even on the road. So that's kind of the Western Conference in a nutshell. Got like half an hour left to talk about the East, which is almost never a good thing if you're talking about the NBA and got a 45-minute show and you've got 30 minutes left to talk about the Eastern Conference. Because you're done with the West. But that, you know, essentially sets up Golden State going against Memphis, which Memphis and Mike Conley, 100% healthy, have problems offensively, as is. And keeping up with Golden State is already pretty much a joke, if 100% healthy. You throw in a facial fracture and Mike Conley not being 100%, and I see Golden State winning that one in five. I think Memphis wins one at their place, but Golden State, I'll say it right now, I've got Golden State in five in that series. And then Houston will play the winner of the Clippers and the Spurs, which I already said would be the Spurs, and I would favor the Spurs. If the Clippers were to beat the Spurs and Houston hosts the Clippers in a seven-game series, I still go with the Clippers. I don't think Dallas is a bad team. I think it was an impressive series win for Houston, but I just think the Clippers and Spurs are better than Houston. That's just my thoughts. So that's the West. Moving over to the East. Atlanta-Brooklyn, 3-2. I'll get into that in a little bit. But going into my predictions for Toronto-Washington, you want to talk about another series I got completely dead wrong? I believe I said Toronto in seven. Let's take a look here. I basically said both teams are struggling. And John Wall will have to win the point guard battle against Kyle Lowry, which can be done, but it's a must. He won the point guard battle. I thought the series would go back and forth, but said Toronto would win just because they had Game 7 at home. Obviously completely wrong on that. Washington controlled the series from the get-go. Toronto's offense was basically non-existent. I don't think they're great. I think they're pretty strong. I think they're playing pretty well right now. They're a pretty good team. I thought they'd be a pretty good team before the season started. So right now, heading into round two of the Eastern Conference playoffs, they're kind of where I thought they'd be. Second half of the year, I thought they'd play better. But coming into the second round of the playoffs, they're kind of where I expected them to be. I expected them to be one of the final four teams in the East, left standing. And they're a pretty good team. They're not great. They're not average. But they're pretty good. They're not an easy out, no matter who you are. But so, going back to Atlanta-Brooklyn, the 1-8, Atlanta's up 3-2. And, you know, Atlanta started the series up 2-0. Nets answered back with a couple games of their own, a couple wins. Featured more Brook Lopez. But you look at Game 5, back in Atlanta, and Brook Lopez puts up 15 points and 3 rebounds. 15 and 3. From Brook Lopez. He shot the ball 13 times, which he should be shooting it more. And that said, even if he had shot it more, he shot 4 of 13 from the field. So, Brook Lopez had a bad game. They lost. It's pretty simple, realistically, if you're the Nets in the series. If Lopez has things going, you've got a solid shot at winning. Because Atlanta's defense has just not been that good since the All-Star break. Their offense has, you know, also not been as good, but their defense has primarily been what's led to them not having a strong second half of the year. They still had a solid second half of the season, but obviously not as good as the first half. But so the Nets need to get Lopez going, because offensively he's a mismatch for any Hawk. Game 6 back in Brooklyn. Can they get Lopez going again? Tie this thing up? I think they can. I wouldn't expect them to because I think the Hawks are better and I trust the Hawks more than I trust the Nets, even in Brooklyn. So I think the series will end 4-2. But, you know, I do think that Brooklyn absolutely can win at home. But you have to get Brook Lopez going. 15-3, shooting 4 of 13 from the field. Obviously not going to cut it. Hawks had 25 assists in Game 5. And, man, did they ride their starters. Teague had 20. Korver had 17. Horford had 20. Millsap had 10. Damari Carroll had 24. Damari Carroll was the leading scorer in that game. That's pretty insane. Damari Carroll had 24 and 7 with 3 assists. That's pretty good for Damari Carroll. 42 minutes played is also the most on the Hawks. Pretty interesting to me. They went a legitimate 8 deep. A couple guys had a minute here, a minute there. That's basically what the Hawks are, is, you know, a strong 8 deep. Like basically most teams. Your ninth guy isn't necessarily strong. But teams will usually push either 8 or 9 guys in the postseason. again, I expect Atlanta to go into Brooklyn and win, but Brooklyn's got to get Brook Lopez going. They can, but I just trust the Hawks more than I trust the Nets. So I expect Atlanta to move on and play Washington in that series. To me, it's kind of a coin flip. Again, I don't want to get into these second-round series in this podcast, but Atlanta, unfortunately, has looked like some people thought they might, which is not dominant. Meanwhile, Washington looks like they're playing as well as they can play, which is pretty good, which I think Atlanta right now is pretty good. I don't think they're really good. I think they're pretty good. I think Washington's playing pretty good. So should be a great series, assuming Atlanta moves on. If Brooklyn does, I've got Washington moving forward for sure. But so in the bottom half of the Eastern Conference bracket, you got the 3-6 in Chicago and Milwaukee, and then the 2-7 Cleveland Boston. I don't know how I want to divvy this up, but let's start with Chicago Milwaukee. So Chicago was up 3-0 in the series. Game 3, Milwaukee was up, I think it was 18 points at one point in Milwaukee. First game in Milwaukee, playoff game against the Bulls. They hate the Bulls. These two teams don't like each other. Bucks especially hate the Bulls. But so they gave that one away in double overtime. And, you know, that kind of killed the Bucks' hopes in the series. If they were to win that one, they could have very easily went up 3-2 because they won the next two games. So they could have been up 3-2 coming into Game 6, which, just throw it out there, if they were up 3-2 and the Bucks won by 54, or the Bulls won by 54, I don't know. It's funny to see 120-66. I like the Bucks. I like rooting for the Bucks. I think they've got an interesting team. I think they've got a bright future. Pretty sure they're the youngest team in the NBA. And I'm watching it taped right now. Not taped. On playback on TNT right now. And it's got Jimmy Butler messing with Zaza after the whistle's called. But and Chicago just went up 30 with 2:46 in the second quarter left. But so the Bulls obviously aren't 54 points better than the Bucks. No NBA team is 27 points better than another NBA team, let alone 54. But so, you know, Chicago was hitting on all cylinders. They were done. Not that they were messing around at all, but they clearly were not messing around in this one. They wanted to end things now. Not that they didn't in Game 4 or Game 5, but clearly everything was clicking for them. And that's what makes them dangerous, is games like this, where defensively, if everything, basically defensively, if they put all their effort into it, they can be an elite defensive team. And then offensively, if everything's going, their shooters are hitting their shots, and Rose is distributing and attacking, and Gasol and Noah are having to weigh inside. Jeez. Just looking at the plus-minus numbers. But so if everything's going the Bulls' way offensively, they can also be dangerous. But so, man, they also played every player in their roster, which if you're up by 50, you should clear your bench. I will say that. Every player scored, just in case you were wondering that, too. Solid 13 guys got into the game and scored for the Chicago Bulls in this one. But so they shot 51% from the field, 50% from three. You shoot 51% from the field, you're not losing a game. Couple that with 50% from three, and you out-rebound the team, other team by nine, and you have 31 assists. You win the foul game. You have more steals. You have less turnovers. You're probably going to win the game. Bucks had more blocks, for what that's worth. But outside of that, I mean, some of these numbers are just insane. Chris Middleton was minus 41. Jimmy Butler was plus 46. Joakim Noah had the only double-double. And most of that is because no player played more than 31 minutes in this game. 32. Minutes, he got ejected though. But Ersan started for the Bucks. He played 17. Zaza started, played 17. MCW started, played 17. OJ Mayo played 24. Jared Bayless played 32. So I actually lied on that, that no player played more than whatever I said it was, 32. Oh, but so yeah, Bayless played 32 minutes. But so guys like Tyler Ennis and Miles. Jesus, I just went through all three Plummers right there. But so Miles Plummer also got in for 16 minutes. I mean, that just showed you how this game was over, how quickly this game was over. The Bucks at half, the Bulls at halftime were up 65-33. Then they won the third quarter by 7 and the fourth quarter by 15. They won the first quarter by 18, second quarter by 14, and like I said, third by 7, fourth by 15. That was... Bulls showed they were the better team, which is true. I mean... Again, Milwaukee could have been up 3-2. Ultimately, they could have won the series. The Bulls are the better team today. Not just today, like the way they played, but just in general. Your average seven-game series between these two teams, the Bulls are going to win more than they're going to lose. They're just a talented team. They're way more experienced. Have all, you know, a number of veterans who have been here and done it in the postseason, as opposed to Milwaukee. Again, they're, you know, probably the youngest team in the NBA. I'm 90% sure they are. Don't have the exact stat or it memorized in my head. Milwaukee's just not there yet. Future is bright, but they're just not there. Other series I haven't gotten to in the East yet, last series, this first round, Cleveland over Boston, 4-0. I picked a sweep. I'm a Boston Celtics fan. I picked Cleveland to sweep Boston. That's no better way to put it. Even if I was trying to be a homer and give Boston a game, I just couldn't. Cleveland was just that much more talent. But so, Cleveland moves on. They play Chicago. And I said I didn't want to preview second round round series, but I will say this, that, you know, and this may go on for a couple minutes, but when the Bulls are on, you know, not that they should be beating teams by 50, but they are a very good team and very dangerous, because defensively with Thibodeau, they can be a top five team, and offensively if everything's clicking, they can be a top five team. The Bulls, therefore, when everything is clicking, can be, you know, extremely difficult to beat, which was the case last night. But, you know, obviously the Bulls don't play that way on a nightly basis. No one does. And they don't play close to it on a nightly basis.
That's why they lost two straight to Milwaukee and almost three straight, a double overtime game to start things off. So, you know, it's amazing what time can do and what one day can change. I mean, taking a really quick detour here, but NFL draft, I'm a Titans guy. As I mentioned before, I do a Titans podcast for the Red Light Sports Network. 24 hours ago, who knows who the quarterback is going forward. If they draft Mariota, if they keep Mariota, if they trade the pick, that's where all the buzz was number two overall, which was fun for a Titans fan, from a Titans fan's perspective. But it's crazy how much a day can change things and what your outlook is. 24 hours ago, people were wondering if Chicago would even make it out of the series because they had lost two straight. They almost lost three straight. They were playing in Milwaukee for game six. Yeah, they were favored by 4 points, according to Vegas, but it's 4 points. They just lost two straight. It's in Milwaukee. It wouldn't have surprised anyone to see Milwaukee win game six and force a game seven based on the last two or three games of the series. Yet they come out and win by 50. And that's an understatement, which is pretty incredible. But it's crazy what one day can do because, again, 24 hours ago, you're wondering if Chicago makes it past Milwaukee. And yet, right now, it seems like a lot of people are saying Chicago over Cleveland because of Kevin Love's injury. He's out for the remainder of the playoffs. So, be careful what one game does. It is one game. If everything goes right for you and everything goes right for wrong for the other team, you're going to look amazing. Doesn't matter the sport. Players have bad games. Players have fantastic games. That was the case for Chicago-Milwaukee tonight. Last night, technically. But so, Chicago-Cleveland in the next round. I'm not going to give away my pick, but I will say that Cleveland still has LeBron. Cleveland still has Kyrie, who post-All-Star break has been amazing, in large part because of his three-point percentage. Is north of 45%. But so, you know, they have the two best players in the series. Without a question. LeBron's still the best player in the world to me. Kyrie, offensively, is, you know, can't be matched by anyone both have. Now, Rose and Kyrie, that matchup will certainly be interesting. Because I think both guys will semi-struggle to defend the other. Cavs won't be able to space the floor as well as they have all season long without Love, which will, you know, cause problems here and there. Cleveland teams got past those Chicago teams in the past with LeBron. And LeBron didn't have as much help as he has now, back then, in Cleveland. Miami, different story, but those past Cleveland teams to this Cleveland team, even without Love, trumps those past Cleveland teams. Now, those past Chicago teams, you can make the argument that offensively they're much better than they were, even though at times they still do struggle. Like we saw against Milwaukee at times during that series. But Chicago can be better than what they used to be. Derrick Rose is not what he used to be. So, and back then, LeBron could check Derrick Rose just fine for an entire quarter. He can do that again in this series. So, you know, before we point and say, wow, look at Chicago. Hey, look at that. Kevin Love's done for the postseason. Chicago still doesn't have the top two players in the series. So, yeah. You give me LeBron over anyone else in the NBA.
I'll just say that much. But so in the West, I still think it is what I figured it would be. That if the Clippers were to beat the Spurs in the first round, you know, the winner of that series would represent the bottom of the West and Golden State would come out of the top. And then in the East, you know, as long as Atlanta makes it through, you're going to have, representing the East, with a pretty damn good team in the bottom, whether it's Chicago or Cleveland. But so, you know, a juggernaut's coming out of the West. And with Kevin Love's injury, what does that mean for Cleveland and the East and their chances in the finals, whoever comes out of the East? If it's Cleveland, obviously I give the advantage to whoever comes out of the West. Now, it wasn't obvious before. I think Golden State would have beaten anyone in a 7-game series. I still think they do. But if Cleveland's 100% healthy, it would have been fun to see. Because LeBron is as close to his prime as he will ever be. Kyrie is playing unbelievable since the All-Star break. I thought Kyrie was overrated coming into this season. A lot of that was because he couldn't really shoot the three efficiently. But 45% plus since the All-Star break, basically. And that's, you know, to go along with the best ball handling in the league, you know, playing exceptional. So Cleveland's dangerous, but you take out Love, and their offense can still be really good, as we've seen with LeBron the last 10 years in the league. But I don't know if they have the firepower to win a 7-game series with a team like Golden State or San Antonio if they're clicking, or the Clippers if they're clicking. I think one of those three teams is coming out of the West, and whether it is Cleveland or not, that team that comes out East is just not going to have the firepower that whatever team comes out West has. So, you know, entering the playoffs, thought Golden State was the team to beat. They're the best team offensively and defensively, efficiency-wise. How do you not go with that team? But today, it just seems more and more likely that Golden State's going to win the whole thing, which is really cool because it's different. It'll be nice to have in the NBA. But I really wish that Cleveland would be at full strength, because I think it would have been a really interesting series, and I still think it can be. But it's not what it could have been, potentially, if those two teams match up. That's about all I've got for the first round. I've gone through the East and the West, and, you know, without giving away completely everything for my second round predictions. You know, I do have the Spurs beating the Clippers in Game 7. I have Atlanta going into Brooklyn and winning Game 6. Those are the two series still going on in the NBA. In terms of the first round, I still think Golden State's going to win the whole thing. And Cleveland's injury for Kevin Love just kind of kills their chances of winning a title. Love wasn't playing spectacular throughout the entire season, but Cleveland needed Kevin Love if they were going to win a title. Not necessarily to get out of the East, but to beat whoever comes out West. Cleveland needed Kevin Love. No matter how much anyone else wants to fight against it. That team is still really good with what they have, and they'll have the best player in every single series they play in. The top two in almost all of them. But Cleveland's not what they were with Love, as opposed to not having Love. He just helps them space the floor offensively. Defensively is a little different story. Rebounding the ball, obviously he helps, which helps fast breaks, where Cleveland can thrive. So, you know, it's not even just him spacing the floor. It helps Cleveland in multiple ways. It hurts them not having Love. So, again, you can follow the show on Twitter at RLSN Basketball. If you've loved the last 45 minutes or hour and a half, if you listen to me over on Titan Talk, surprised my voice isn't gone yet, but you can follow Titan Talk on Twitter at RLS and Titans if you're into the NFL and the Tennessee Titans in general. But basketball-wise, follow the show at RLS and Basketball. If you love me, like I was saying before, follow me on Twitter at KIDCUNI. I don't expect any of you guys to love me, but maybe you can like me, perhaps. Kind of, sort of. Not really. We'll see what happens. So the next show kind of depends when these series get over with. I'll definitely be previewing the second round, both, you know, with my voice and with my keyboard, so to say, blogging. Again, all the blogs and archive podcasts over at the RedLightSportsNetwork.com. It's been a fun past 45 minutes talking playoffs, past hour and a half talking NFL draft as well. So, busy night and day, but it's certainly been fun as always. And go Boston. We'll leave on that note with this show. It's been fun, guys. Can't wait for the second round to start up. NBA Playoffs 2015. Adios.